Nō re ki te atua, mā ngā rongo ki te whenua whakaro pai ki ngā tangata katoa. Glory to God, peace on earth and goodwill to you all. Do you need the bright lights on me, or is that... I like to see you, even though you're so far away, so many of you. Noe hoa te whenua me one tenimia te ao mā ngā tangata katoa e noho ane I runga. The earth is the Lord's. Everything in it belongs to him. Ko ngā rangi he rangi noe hoa. Ko te whenua I he mea homai nāna ki a mātai. The heavens belong to God, but the earth he has given to us. Nō reira ka huri atu ki ngā rairangi maunga o tēnei rohe. So I turn to the mountains of this rohe. Te arawa waka tēnā koe. Ki ngā maunga Otawa me Rangiuru ko tēnei te mihi ki a Kōrua. Ki a Waitaha ki a Tapuika hoki ko tēnei te mihi ki a Kōrua. Na mata waka I Wanganui a tātou. So I acknowledge the mountains of this place. I acknowledge the mana whenua of this place. I acknowledge also the different waka that are amongst us this morning. Ka huri atu ki ngā tangata tiriti. And I acknowledge also the people of the treaty. Mai ngā hau e whā hoki. No mai hare mai, whakatau mai I Wanganui a tātou. E pā, he mihi whakawhetai tēnei ki a koe. So my Father in heaven, we acknowledge you and we thank you for your presence amongst us this morning. Ko wai au. So who am I? I whānau mai ai ki kirikiri roa. I was born in the Tron. Engari. For the last 40 odd years, Jeannie, my wife and I, sitting there in the third row, we've lived in Paengaroa o ngā Marakumiro o Marukukiri for the last 40 odd years on the banks of the Kaituna. Nō reira, ko Kaituna te awa, ko Rangiriri te maunga, ko Waitangi te kawanata, ko Ihu Karaiti te tangata me te atua, tihei Māori ora. So Jesus is both the human and the God. Tihei Māori ora. It's wonderful to be here with you this morning, and I thank you, Josiah, for your invitation to me and the courage that you have for opening up this Pandora's box. And I'm really sitting amongst you this morning in the midst of the worship, wondering how honest to be. How truthful should I be this morning? Because I'm serious, it really is a Pandora's box that you are opening up, and if you're inviting in this aspect about te tiriti or waitangi, then you are inviting in some pretty tough stuff. Oh, just this book is, I'm going to be unashamedly advertising my book. Because what I'm talking about this morning's all in there and a lot more besides. And you can buy it at Marge Martelletti's bookshop gift wrap on the Jellicoe Street. She's sitting in the back row there. Good. We might ask the question, what has the gospel got to do with politics? Because that's actually the question that the first missionary asked when he came into this area of Tauranga Moana in 1838. If we ask the question that some of you might be asking, we could go further and say, well, actually, what has the gospel to do with te tiriti? I need to acknowledge some folk at the moment and parts of my journey, because my journey is dependent upon those that have helped me understand some things about this land. Mihata ki a koe e kui e hine. So I was in a class with Hene Portanid a long time ago, It was in an immersion class, learning Te Reo Māori. And one of the teachers of that class, she is also from Te Ranga Moana, and she said to me, Nahuya Dixon's her name, she was from Te Ranga, but she lives in Te Ranga Waiwai at the moment. She said to me at that class, "You need to do some research on what your missionaries did to my people in Te Ranga." He wero tēnā. It set me on a long journey to understand about this man, Alfred Brown, and his understandings around his dilemmas and what happened to the land of Te Ranga Moana and the Church Missionary Society land, etc. And so that's a whole other story, but it did set me on an inquiry that's been probably going on for the last 20-odd years. So Alfred Brown asked that question, and I've been asking that question myself: what has the gospel got to do with the Tiriti o Waitangi? It actually, hopefully, will be told in the part of this big take I've got for you this morning. It's a big feast, a bit of a challenge perhaps on a Sunday morning, and I hope you don't get indigestion from it. But so that was a question that Archdeacon Brown of the Church Missionary Society said when he was grappling with some of the issues of the day. The question was continued by this man called Henry Williams, who was the leader of the Church Missionary Society, the first major mission society in New Zealand. He arrived here in 1823. The gospel was first preached here in 1814 by Samuel Marsden. But by the time that Williams got here, or to Paihia in the north, the mission was fruitless and in confusion. That's what the statement was. Not much progress had been made. By 1830, by the measure of their success, the Church Missionary Society had only achieved 2 baptisms. Henry Williams arrived in a very interesting but very time of real upheaval. It's called the time of the musket wars, because the new technology had come into the land, and Māori had seized this new technology, as we all would, and it enabled them to move through the land, particularly the hapū, the iwi of Ngāpuhi, and they came down here. And thousands of people were killed during that time. They estimate around about 20,000 people were killed during those musket wars of around 20 years. It had a major change in terms of the socio-political demographic organization of the country. That's the time that Henry Williams arrived, this time of upheaval. This is a beautiful engraving photo that was made of a painting that Henry Williams himself made. It's his boat called the Te Karere in Tauranga Harbour in 1832. As he was invited into Tauranga Harbour, as he was invited on the journey with Ngāpuhi, Titore was the rangatira, he was invited to accompany them on their utu trips down here into the Bay of Plenty. What you can imagine from that, you can begin to imagine something of the relationship that had been formed by Henry Williams with Ngāpuhi, and then ultimately with Henry Williams with Ngāti Ranganui and Ngāti Rangi here in Tauranga Moana, which resulted in the invitation of them to set up their mission stations. So here they were in the midst of these musket wars. That was part of the upheaval. It wasn't the only upheaval. The other upheaval was in the midst of that all that warfare, from those 2 baptisms in 1830. By 1840, it says, the estimates are that over 65,000 Māori were involved in whakamoimiti in the midst. That means praise, worship, services. We're praying for a revival. We've had revival in this land. It's an unheralded revival, but that's half the population had turned in some ways into a new way of living. These are all beautiful stories that we could spend a whole day talking about, but It's because of the providence of God that this happened, but also on the ground because of what we call the indigenous evangelists. People like Hakaraya Mahita, who came here, who was part of Tapuwika and Waitaha, who was once a slave in the north and had his life turned changed by the gospel and had come down here and set up a village in Kenana, a village in Canaan, just outside of Te Puke. People like that spread the gospel, and Maori world was again turned upside down. But these weren't the only challenges. The major challenges from were also what we would call the challenges that my ancestors brought to the land. My ancestors came here in 1867, and what was it that my ancestor wanted? He wanted land, the same as all the other Europeans that were coming out here, was that they were answering the advertisements which said, there is as much land as you want, come and get it. And that's what my ancestors did. They also came and had no respect at all for what was what we called the law of the land, the tikanga, the customs of the land. And they lived in a rebellious way, you could say, because they didn't even obey the protocols of their own people. Drugs, sex, and rock and roll in the 1800s. It was syphilis, drunkenness, violence. And this was the challenges that Ngāpuhi leaders were facing in the 1830s. Who did Ngāpuhi turn to when they were faced with these challenges that were emitting out of places like Russell, Kororareka, the place where Satan has his dominion? Who did they turn to? They turned to the missionary. They turned to particularly Henry Williams or Karuwha, because they were the ones that they had established a relationship with, and they were the ones that they trusted. They didn't turn to the drunken sailors for advice of what to do, but they turned to the missionaries. Claudia Orange, I would say, call her the doyenne of treaty writers, treaty historians. She said that the treaty itself was secured simply because many Māori trusted the missionaries' good intentions. So what was happening in the midst of all this troubles with these settlers that were coming for land, settlers that were just living in a way an anarchistic life, they went to the missionaries, and the missionaries began to reach out to the Crown in England and said, we need to do something about this chaos that's happening out here. And so as a result of that, of course, the eventuality came of the treaty. But what Claudia Orange is saying, without missionary, there wouldn't have been a treaty. Without Rangihaua, we could say, without the place where the gospel arrived, there would be no Waitangi. This is quite a challenging statement to make in academia at the moment, but I believe that it has good analysis behind it. My statement is that the Tiriti o Waitangi is not only a political and a legal document, but it's a theological document as well. And we'll talk a little bit about that today. So this man, Henry Williams, the leader of the Church Missionary Society in Paihia, which is just down the road from Waitangi, across the bay from Kororareka or Russell, he was the one who providentially was given the task of translating the treaty. So on the 4th, his son Edward and him translated the treaty. But not only did Henry Williams translate the treaty, he also mediated the treaty. What do I mean by the fact that he mediated the treaty? It's my sense that without Henry's mana, rangatira would never have gathered at Paihia. They wouldn't have gathered simply because Busby called them. They gathered because they respected this man. And so this man translated the treaty, in a sense gave his mana to the invitation to rangatira to come to Waitangi on the 5th and the 6th of February 1840. And then he was the one who was tasked with enunciating to the gathered rangatira, he aha tēnā, what is this thing? So he not only translated it, gave his mana to it, but he was the one who framed it. That is, he explained to them, what is this all about? What is this bit of paper or this bit of parchment that the crown has sent and has asked you to sign? And one of the main ways that Henry Williams framed it was as he kawanata, as a covenant. Many of you will know the background to the treaty negotiations. On the 5th, there was rari-rari. It was all argument. There was people standing up against it, and some of them kaweti and others saying, no, it's don't sign this thing. On the 5th, Lieutenant Governor Hobson went back to his boat. It was unsigned, but they'd put out the kōrero and explanation. The rangatira gathered at a place called Te Tau Rangatira, which is beside Te Ti Marae. It's a big piece of field there. That's a photo of it there. And they wānanga'd into the night of the 5th to say, what are we going to do about this thing? Are we going to sign it or not? It's actually a very unheralded thing that Henry Williams was in their midst. He wānanga'd into the night with them, and this is what he said to them. I told them to listen with care, that we the missionaries fully approved of the treaty, that it was an act of love towards them on the part of the Queen, who desired to secure for them their property rights and their privileges. So the next day they gathered on February the 6th. This is a later record by Henry Williams. He said, feeling as I did that the terms of the treaty were a sacred compact, a covenant between the British government and the chiefs of New Zealand, I was able to speak with confidence as to the integrity and the honour of England. So he believed that was a tapu thing. He believed it was a sacred thing, and he recommended to the missionaries, just as Claudia Orange said, it was because of the missionaries' good intentions that Māori signed. So he framed it to rangatira as a tapu thing. He framed it as a sacred thing, as a covenant. The first rangatira to sign it was this man called Honiheke Pokai, Ngāpuhi rangatira. He goes to sign it, and as he signs it, he says, Governor, remain a father for us, saying to all the gathered rangatira, this is a good thing. It is even as the word of God. So right at the start there, it was elevated. It was elevated above a political document, and it entered into the realm of sacredness, received in that way by so many. Another very interesting thing happened just before the invitation for the rangatira to come and sign. This man at the top there, his name was Bishop Pompelier, and he was the head of the Roman Catholic Mission. And he stood up and he interrupted the proceedings and said, what about us? What about us Catholics? What about us Māori Catholics? How are we going to fare under this? And so Henry Williams scurries off in a corner with Lieutenant Governor Hobson and says, what are we going to do about this? And it's recorded that Hobson responded to Henry Williams and said, if he had come to us before, I would have written this in the treaty. It's a really interesting thing. Three years ago, in fact, I got a phone call from these two, Kaumātua and Tauranga Moana. One of them says, hey, boy, I'm 70 years old at that stage, right? Boy, we want you to be a part of a petition. And I said, oh, okay, well, what's the petition? This is Patrick Nicholas from Piriraka. And he said, oh, we want the Crown to acknowledge the oral article, the fact that the Crown committed to tiaki, to care for the faiths that are in this land. Ritinga Māori, may all the Christian faiths, we want the Crown to acknowledge that. So Huikākahu Kawe and Patrick Nicholas and I launched this petition, and we put it out, and they both passed away in the midst of that. So I was left holding this petition. I want to say that petition went successfully to Parliament, and the select committee came back to us and said, with a recommendation from Sir Geoffrey Palmer, this argument is a moral argument and it has weight and we need to give attention to it. So this is something that's sitting in the kete of the government at the moment, and I'll return to that a bit later. The high point. 60,000 Māori whakamoemiti. The treaty had been signed under the auspices of the missionaries. Already within a few years, Henry Williams wrote, "I am grieved beyond the power of expression at the attempted violation of the treaty and must never again plead the honour and the integrity of Her Majesty's government. This appears to have been lost or never to have been possessed." So within 7 years, he was completely dispirited about the treaty, the way that it was being honoured or dishonoured at the time, and his lost heart around the whole thing. Some of you might have been to Waitangi. Can I have a show of hands? Oh, look at you, most of you. And you will see and remember the manicured lawns of Waitangi, the beautiful place that it is with the meeting house and with Busby's house. Beautiful conditions. This is what Busby's house, where the treaty was signed, looked like in 1930. You see, what happened very quickly after the signing of the treaty, it almost disappeared from sight. In fact, physically, it became a rat-eaten, water-infested document sitting in the basement of Government House. The land where the treaty was signed was eventually sold, and it became a rundown farm. And in 1930, our Governor-General, his name was Lord Bledisloe, was taken up there, and he was a believer. Something happened in his heart, and he heard that the land was for sale, so he purchased the land of Waitangi. And then a few years later, in 1932, he gifted the land where many of you have been, he gifted it to the nation. And then he proceeded in 2 years later to go through the process, the tikanga, the celebrations of handing it over. That was in 1934. A month before, he had been in Marlborough with this hapū called Te Ateawa or Te Waka o Māui. And he received from them a piece of greenstone because he told them what he was doing. He took this piece of greenstone with him to Waitangi. Now, this piece of greenstone, listen to this, is called a tangiwai. That's the type of greenstone. He took a tangiwai for Waitangi. He took this greenstone for the place of weeping. And he presented it to the nation, and it sits up there in the museum. And he stands before the nation in 1934, and he says this, "Let Waitangi be to us all a tatau ponamu, a symbol of peace and unity." And then Frederick Augustus Bennett prayed on his behalf, "O God, grant that this sacred compact here made in these waters may be faithfully and honourably kept for all time to come." This is the prayer of the Governor General. See, Bledisloe understood some very important things about Te Tiriti. One, it's sacred. Two, it's an enduring covenant. And three, it needs to be honoured. You see, covenants and treaties, I use a big word now, ubiquitous. They're everywhere. All societies have them. And if we return to that original question that Archdeacon Brown was asking, what have treaties got to do with the gospel? If we are Bible students, we might be able to dig a little deeper and see that they have everything to do with the gospel. There are many precedents in the Old Testament, particularly of treaties or covenants being made as political comings together. The Gibeonite one is one that some of you will know, and unfortunately we don't have time this morning to go into it, but how seriously God takes human covenants. Marriage is another one, but the biblical world is full of covenants, and treaties are considered as covenants. A few years later, a kaumātua said, "I was there at Waitangi and I listened to the love of the Queen. I then heard about the advantages of the treaty. It's a covenant." So 20 years later, the idea of covenant was still resident in the land. And 2 years ago, I was invited to speak and to give the sermon at Waitangi and the dawn service. And the reading of the day was, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and to love your neighbor as yourself." That was the reading I was given, you know, in order to make the koho. And I asked the same question: what has love got to do with Te Tiriti o Waitangi? I posed the challenge that, is love only a Sunday occupation? Or is love something that should be the undergirding guidance for all of our activities, for all of our time? And that's where I settled, that actually love has everything to do with Te Tiriti o Waitangi. But we might ask the question then, what manner of love is this? What is the manner of love that Henry Williams proposed to Māori? What is the manner of love that Henry Williams committed on behalf of the Crown to Māori? And I believe this is where the church is singularly called to operate and to set an example. We understand the whole ethos of Christ's kenotic incarnation, this self-emptying. Although he was in the fullness of God, he did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but he made himself nothing, and he became in the likeness of a servant and became obedient even unto death. This is the example of agape love. We call it sacrificial love, and that's the kind of love that undergirded the commitment of the missionaries and the Crown to Māori at Waitangi in 1840. So Williams committed Victoria's representatives to always seek the highest good for Māori. We can use marriage as a very good example of this agape love, and Paul the Apostle speaks a lot about that. After the discussions had taken place, Rangatira came forward, shook the hand of William Hobson, and this is what he says. He said, "He iwi tahi tātou." Very controversial statement, this one. It's been used to say we're all one people, but as my friend Hui Kākahu Kāwe says, yeah, but who's one? Who's one are we? I want to suggest that Lieutenant Governor Hobson was given this phrase, "He iwi tahi tātou," as a non-Māori speaker by Henry Williams. It was given in the understanding of covenantal unity of two autonomous, independent beings, whether they be people groups like the Jews and the Gentiles, or like two partners being married together in a marriage, being brought together into a covenantal union. So there's a oneness, a unity, holding on to the independence of the two who are brought together. As I go around the country, which I'm apt to do at the moment, and speaking in places like this, one of the oppositions I get from my people particularly is, why is it that Māori think they're special under the treaty? It's not fair. You know, it's a strange thing, really, but that's common, and some of you might think that. And you know what I say? Because under the treaty, they are special. If we read the preamble, let's just read a couple of lines. "Her Majesty Victoria, Queen of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland, regarding with her royal favour the nations, chiefs and tribes of New Zealand." Under the treaty, there is a specialness. We just need to understand what is the nature of that specialness and then get over it. You know why? Because everybody else is special too. under the treaty. We all have our specialness, and we need to find what is the nature of that specialness. So as Pākehā, I was so encouraged when I read and heard Sir Eddie Jury's statement to Rangatira up in the north in 1989. He said to his people, "We must not also forget that the treaty is just a bill of rights for Māori. It's a bill of rights for Pākehā too. It is the treaty that gives Pākehā the right to be here. Without the treaty, there would be no lawful authority for the Pākehā presence in this part of the South Pacific. In fact, we would be like our neighbours without the treaty." Enough of that. "We must remember that if we are the tangata whenua, the original people, then the Pākehā are the tangata tiriti, those that belong to the land by right of the treaty. To honour our forefathers," he said to his people, "then we as Māori must never challenge, threaten, compromise or prejudice the rights of Pākehā to be here. We cannot claim our own rights if we do not respect the rights of others." Tangata tiriti, people of the treaty. But not only Pākehā, for all settlers who enter into this land via te tiriti or waitangi become tangata tiriti alongside tangata whenua in a covenantal relationship of agape. My preoccupation in all of this has always been about reconciliation. My history professor at Waikato University, Peter Gibbons, said that colonization is not just an early morning fog that dissipates mid-morning as the bright sun of national identity comes out. We're all one, we're all New Zealanders. I ask the question, how do we proceed with reconciliation? Can I remind you of the Gibeonite Treaty, the treaty that the children of Israel made with the Gibeonites as they were entering into the promised land, and the drought that came 500 years later during the reign of King David? So David inquired to the Lord. He said, "There's a drought in the land. What's it all about?" And the Lord responded to him, "Saul broke the treaty with the Gibeonites that was made 400 years ago." David said to the Lord, "What should I do?" And the Lord said to him, "Go and talk to them. Go and ask them." Profound. So David went to the Gibeonites and asked them the simple question, "What must I do to be reconciled?" It's a long story, but the drought was lifted. It's about relationship, because we don't know what to do from afar. We don't know what to do from an intellectual point of view. The only way that I'll know how to be reconciled with my wife, for example, is to be in relationship with her, to talk with her, and to try and understand. And that's what we need to do as Pākehā, for example. That's what the Crown needs to do, not to impose what reconciliation would look like the settlement process, but to ask a long, deep, searching question, "What must I do to be reconciled?" You see, we forget, we continue to forget what the impact of this broken covenant has had and continues to have on te iwi Māori. The loss of land, its mana and economic base, the loss of language, the loss of culture, and the encouragement to die and to assimilate into the dominant culture, to become like us, and then you'll be successful. King Itawhiao says, "Ko rere whenua atu me hoki whenua mai." It was land that was taken. It's land that must be returned. That's just his statement. I ask the question, where was the church after 1840? Where was the church when Governor Grey ordered the invasion of the Waikato in the 1860s? Where was the church in Pukahinahina Gate Pā? Where was the church when Hakaraia Mahita was chased around the hills here, and Waitaha had their land confiscated. Where was the church in Te Papa Tauranga when the whole of downtown Tauranga was given to the crown? Where was the church in 1877 when Judge Prendergast called the treaty a simple nullity? Where was the church in 1881 when Bryce invaded the non-violent community, Christian community of Parihaka, e Hanoereke Te Atua? Where was the church in the Foreshore and the Seabird Act? Where was the church in this Treaty Principles Bill? Our silence as mediators of the treaty equals a betrayal. It's something that we need to come to terms with. Recently we had the commemoration, the bicentennial commemoration of Henry Williams Te Tauranga Moana. It was a wonderful day. Some of you might have been there. Started off with karakia in the morning and finished with a hopeful seminar on Te Tiriti at night. Te Tiriti is a treaty of hope. One of the keynote speakers was this man, Justice Sir Joe Williams of Ngāti Pukenga and Waitaha. He did a wonderful presentation, which is actually available online, and at the end of it, he said this, which was just so encouraging to me. He said, do you know, and he's not a churchman, I can't say exactly, of course, you know, where people are at, but it's not something that he would probably present himself as. So he's not presenting himself as a church person. He's presenting himself as a judge of the Supreme Court, and he said, you know, there still remains a place of mediation for the church. And I thought, after all of this, it's not lost. And one of the reasons being is that it's the church that understands what laying down our lives for the sake of the other is. And that's the basis of Te Tiriti. Te Tiriti will not work by rights claiming alone. Te Tiriti will work when we honour each other in sacrificial love. And we and I are well versed in that, and we're equipped, I believe, to make that journey. And this is the kicker. Even though it might not benefit us personally, actually, it could work the other way. But ultimately, for the nation, God is watching over who is keeping their covenants faithfully. And ultimately, it is God's grace, His mercy, who will oversee the whole relationship and transaction that was initiated nearly 200 years ago at Waitangi. And I believe what we need are some national hui around this, because there's still a lot of things to be worked through. National hui where we can gather together all peoples, Pākehā, Māori, non-Māori, and to discuss and to be able to put out all of the things that we're thinking and feeling, because the Crown has promised to do that, but they've not done a very good job of curating this space, of bringing us into an understanding as a nation. So that's my next petition, is to petition again the Crown and call for national inquiry, perhaps rohe by rohe, where we as a nation can gather and discuss and put out our fears, put out our hopes, put out our ideas. And then as a people, let it be brought together. And that's a place where the church would have much to say. It's a kairos moment, and it's time to restore mana. It's time to restore the mana to Te Iwi Māori. It's time to restore the mana to the Crown. It's time to restore the mana to the church. And finally, it's this time to restore the mana o te kawanata I te motu. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa.